We're back with the Danger Room's 24 Days of Christmas. This year, we're doing one episode per affiliation, each with its own special guest. We made an effort this year to bring in some guests from all over the world. Sit back, listen, and Merry Christmas.
Hello, and welcome to another Christmas episode of the Danger Room. Today with me, I have Joe Manji, and we're going to be talking about X-Force. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's exciting to talk to you about something. People would have maybe expected some X-Men, but we threw a little bit of a curveball here. And I'm super excited with some of the recent changes to get someone's opinion that has played them both before and after. So this will be fun for me. Before we jump into the list, why don't you introduce yourself for anyone who might not know you?
Sweet, yeah. So my name's Joe. I've been playing miniatures games for most of my life. Started with Games Workshop, as most people do. Just quickly found Blood Bowl, which has been my main love. Played that for the last 30 years or so. Played tournaments the last 15 years for that. Eventually got to the point where I needed to branch out a little bit, cleanse my palate after like 1,000 games of tournament Blood Bowl, and then found Marvel, which was a delight because it's a wonderful game and I really love.
I have never played Blood Bowl. It's always like sitting there mocking me. I'm like, this looks great, this looks fun, and I've just never taken the dive. So might have to do that sometime.
It's a love it or hate it game. It's probably the most frustrating game ever made, but there's a lot of good stuff to it as well. So it's fun.
Well, let's jump in and talk about some of these X-Force things. Why don't you just run down what characters are in your X-Force roster?
Sweet, yeah. So my current list, although always subject to change, is Cable, Logan the Wolverine. That is the more recent version. Psylocke, Domino, X-23, Deadpool, and then Splashes. Bullseye, Luke Cage, Crimson Dynamo, and Hela, Queen of Hell.
Some very, very good characters in that list. So let's focus sort of to start on the affiliated X-Force characters. Would you consider all of them locks? Who sort of fluxes in and out? How did you come to the affiliated ones that are in there right now?
So yeah, I would consider these all locks. I would consider this like the bare minimum number of X-Force characters you'd want, because they are all really good at the moment. Since the update, they're all perfectly playable. Even Sabretooth is all right. Like, he's seeing like genuine play in Daredevil and stuff, so it's not like he's a bad character. But yeah, I've tried all of them. So basically, when the changes happened, I put them all on a list and played them all, and then sort of whittled it down to the ones that I actually thought were best.
And I want to particularly talk about the two that got changed. So Cable and Deadpool got errated. Let's start with Cable. I mean, I think this is probably a huge deal, at least it has been in my experience. So what are your thoughts on Cable sort of before and after these updates?
He's really good now. Before, he was absolutely terrible. I was like, some people were apologists for him, but I was not. I used to run X-Force without Cable. I used to run them without a leader, because I thought it was that bad, which, given that they don't have any cards really to play either at that point, was quite damning, I thought. But now he's incredible. When I read the card, I was a bit like, oh yeah, maybe. But then I played him, and he's just so good. Like, just the rerolls and being able to reroll out skulls as well with leadership is just so good. It's just so consistent. I think a lot of people, including me, have just been surprised at how good he is, because he doesn't do anything like flashy or interesting. He just, every single turn, he double taps you with rerolls and then throws a building at your head. But it's just the fact that he does it every single turn. It's just sort of relentless. It just keeps doing it. And there's nothing you really do about it other than kill him. So yeah, it's just consistent dice, consistent action economy. And he's just a really good model. Like, people are playing him outside of X-Force, which is just crazy to me and wonderful.
I reacted sort of like you said, eh, it's fine. But, you know, I think a lot of people had this image of Cable and thought he would need more than that. And I don't know that people properly evaluated two rerolls, myself included. And so I have played him in Avengers. I have played him out just as a splash. And yeah, he is wonderful for how hyper consistent he always is. It's crazy. The leadership change as well. How does that feel?
Yeah, it does feel a lot better now. I don't know why it shouldn't. On paper, like mathematically, it's not still that great. But I think maybe it's just the psychological feeling of re-rolling out of skulls. It just always feels good. And that actually tallies quite well with Cable himself and also Logan, who's in the list. Because people who have inbuilt rerolls, X-23, the same, Deadpool's the same, getting full value from your rerolls every single turn, every single activation, makes such a huge difference to the efficiency of the models. Because so often you'd get a model skull locked and then they would not get the value from their second reroll. But just being able to get out of the first skull and then use the second reroll is just, it's just really useful. It's surprising to me.
The ability to push through like the cover with some of these good attackers, you have that information. And when you can build that in, you can look at the, how was the initial defense roll? Oh, you're probably just going to get your one. I'm just going to take that away from you and not worry about anything you're trying to do has been actually very powerful.
Another person that would use that leadership super well would be Deadpool. Let's talk about him quick.
He is really, really good. Surprisingly good now. I didn't, when I looked at the card, I was like, yeah, cool, cool. He's okay now. He's usable. But every time I play him, he's amazing. And I don't actually understand why. He just seems to do so much work. I think it's just leg day, which gives him the two range two plays, which means that he has so many more efficient good turns. So previously he had lots of move, attack once turns, and now he's basically only having double attack turns, which is a huge difference for how effective a model is over the course of one game, over the course of 10 games. Also, the double wild on the builder, which he didn't have before, is insane. Like, it doesn't happen every time, but it happens 20% of the time. And 20% of the time to get a free six dice attack is very, very good. Also, he is so good on his backside as well. Like, his the back half of his card is he's basically a four threat, which cascades with the rest of the theme of the team, which is trying to do damage. So if your team is getting better as your opponent's team gets worse, then obviously that sort of pushes forward the game plan and has a very big impact on who can win the game.
He's always been close, and there were like just little weird things that made him inefficient, and they solved all of them. A model with four health on the front side will never be too good, in my opinion. He is hyper efficient now, and being able to use leg day both to put yourself in and out of threat ranges, right? If you have four health, but you're not getting attacked, that's fine. I've had Deadpool blow up to an attack, but I've also had my opponent not. Three dice with a reroll is perfectly reasonable. And he's harder, a little harder than normal to pull in with the unicorns and rainbows. So I agree wholeheartedly. I think this character is realistically a premier three threat. He has so much on the card that is insane. Merc with the mouth, Bang being a gainer, helping him fuel all of these things. And if you roll decently well and get your hit wilds, you make four Bang attacks in one turn. That's four or five die attacks. That's crazy. Like, so, and then you're fueling Merc with the mouth and keeping leg day online all the time.
Yeah, and Merc with the mouth is so good. Like, there's so many applications for that. Like, you know, just turning off two power from Black Cat or something, it's just completely changed the game sometimes. Like, sometimes your opponent spends three turns saving up their power to get to three to steal something, and you just turn it off. He's another reason, him and Domino, another reason why I flirt with Baron Zemo a lot, because rapid fire characters with two rerolls per attack are really, really scary. So just turning, like, you just turn into a complete murder pit.
And there is nothing funnier to me than watching my opponent get frustrated at Deadpool living on one health and then healing. And they finally get him and he flips over and I'm like, I don't care. It actually did nothing. Today's Deadpool. It made him better. Yeah. Like, thank you for that. After all of that effort, now my character has this like really cool spender too. Yeah, way more health. So yeah, I like Deadpool a lot. He was an all-star for me actually at WTC. In the Sam Avenger list, he played a really important role. I do think that this is pretty standard. I'm going to ask about the exclusion of Colossus. I've played him a little bit. I think opinions are sort of, I'll say, mixed. What are your thoughts on Colossus here?
Yeah, so I gave Colossus a good go. I was particularly keen on him because I thought he would be good against CGR, but I tried that and it didn't work. So I had one game in particular where he X-slammed CGR three times. And on paper, that's supposed to be this is the perfect spender. It stuns and staggers him, which is exactly what you want against CGR. And in that game, my opponent cleared the stun with a full action on two occasions and then still tabled me in five turns. And at that point, I was like, okay, we no longer tech for CGR. We just ignore it and carry on. But the second part is that he is good on EMAPs. He's an EMAP specialist, so that's where I would bring him in. But I've got Crimson Dino in the list, who is the best EMAP model in the game, potentially. So if I'm going to play an EMAP specialist, I might as well play the best one, rather than Colossus, if I've got room for the splash.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of spoilers, but you're not running EMAPs, so to have multiple of those pieces probably is a little bit overkill. So I also think that he probably loses out by you not having Wolverine in the list, because no fastball special one of the big reasons you would probably bring him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, him and Wolverine are both really viable models. There's no reason why you couldn't put them in a competitive X-Force list. It's just my particular plan and style and crises don't super gel with them. But yeah, if you were going with EMAPs, then they both might be really good.
Splash characters here. So Bullseye, Cage, Dynamo, and Hela. Let's sort of go through and talk about them a little bit. Why these four? What roles do they serve?
When I'm building my list, because the leader is five threats, the splashes are quite deterministic in what they need to do. They have certain roles that they need to fill just by the virtue of how maths works and how squads have to be built in terms of when I was thinking about building lists. So I want a two threat in there at some level. Five threat leader, you just sometimes just have to have that to make a reasonable squad. Like if you've got a high scoring mission and then you're forced to go four wide or something, it's quite difficult. Try various two threats. Honey Badger's great. People using Wong, I think that's more of a Wolverine style opening. I even used like Nebula at one point just for like super going all in on murder. But I wanted a model that was sort of valuable in every single situation. I could play wherever the mission was, I needed a two threat because that's kind of what he's there for. It's like I found a situation where I need to fix certain models to fit in with what's going on, and then he needs to be able to fit into any role. And Bullseye is best all-rounder, I guess, in that sense. So he can do murder if you need that, and he can also just hold a point, hold an extract and sit on a point if that's what you need as well. And he's really good for just chipping along with damage, because this is obviously an attrition team, so like that one point guaranteed is so good so many times, so yeah, it's really good.
Every time I look at it, I'm just like, I can't believe this is a thing. Like, it's so good.
It's mad as well, because like sometimes if you're in range four, it's two guaranteed things. So leave someone on two health, and they're still dead. And it's so often where people run away from you with one health left, and it's still a medium move, and range four is still enough to get them. So he's just a dog's body, basically, but he synergizes quite well with the rest of the list. And then, so that's the first thing, is a two threat. The second splash is a three threat. It can be anything. I've got Luke, but I've played other things, like Baron Zemo. I played Ghost Spider as well. Because we've got a five threat leader at 17, which is the most common threat value. Four threes and Cable is a quite a common team that you might want to play. You don't want to be forced to play the two every time, although that's still good, which is why it's there in case you do. But having the ability to play that is something that I want available to me. So I feel like whatever it is, I need some kind of three threat in there. And Luke Cage is just a really good model. It's just, there's a common theme against, I guess, in the list, which is just like model quality. That's one of the good things about X-Force is you don't have to take any, like, you don't have to give up any good spots with like mediocre models to fill affiliations. You can just keep putting good models in there. And the good thing about Luke is that we've got lots and lots of models with high damage output, but a little bit squishy. And then if you have one model that can sort of protect them all, then he's got quite a big bubble with heroes as well. So he can sort of protect quite a lot at the same time. That can really make the difference. In particular, Cable is a really good model for him because he's always got two power to do heroes at the start of any turn. And he's super vulnerable to getting killed. Like he's just got some health points and some dice. So if people want to kill him, he does die. Having something that keeps him alive is quite useful. I'm not wedded to him. Like, you can just go different ways. Like, Zemo is obviously great as well.
Having that bodyguard or that tool in your roster is just so... It's almost mandatory at this point, whether it's from Sacrifice or whether it's from, you know, one of these characters. It just seems like you need it if you're going to make a hyper-competitive roster.
Yeah, you need something that sort of disrupts something your opponent's plan. And also, the thing I really like about him is that he's not completely pillow-fisted. Once he gets some power, a spender and a terrain throw is actually quite reasonable. You can get some mileage out of him with an attrition plan, so it's not... He's not just a potato. Dynamo, I almost never play him. He's just there because I played Pat once on an E-shape and he just won the game single-handedly with Dynamo. Dynamo literally defeated 17 threat models on his own. So he's just too good on E-shapes. So if I get stuck on an E-shape, he has to play effectively, I think, is the thinking. He is kind of the wildcard spot. He could be something else. If you wanted to play, you know, another three threat or Ultron or Hulk or anything, then, or CGR, if that's probably the most competitive roster if you do want to play X-Force properly. And then finally, the last sort of like overarching part of the roster is something to deal with extracts and crisis points. So I've got an Eyes in the Prize model, but you could take a Grunt model here, and they have pros and cons each way, but I've got Hela just to play Eyes in the Prize, basically. And the main question, I guess, is why not Beta Ray Bill? I've tried Beta Ray Bill, and obviously he's really good, but he's such a potato on turn two, and I just hate that, and that's just so bad for this particular style of play with X-Force. We need to be going hard at people early, and I've had a lot of games where I feel like Bill has just lost me the game on his own, because he's had a bad turn two and then a bad turn three if people ignore him. And then I can't have a four threat just doing nothing for effectively the first three turns in the game when you're going to be the one chasing the game effectively, trying to kill people. And Hela's just so good. Like, it's crazy. Like, I didn't realize until I put her on the table, like, how much damage she puts out. It's just bonkers, especially with the reauthor in there as well. Like, a six dice attack from range four with Mystic as well, which is good. And then after that, it's quite likely going to be like six or seven dice attack at range three, which is just a huge amount of output. And then she's also got the extra damage chipping in from her little movie action thing. So yeah, she does a lot of work. It's surprising.
Yeah, I actually really like Hela over Bill here. Identifying that tempo issue that's going to make that change is super smart, right? Like that's the kind of decision I think more people, as good as Bill is, that's what more people need to be looking at, is how does that break down and why would you be running one? And so identifying your roster, wanting to be a little faster than what Bill is allowing teams to do is great. And I think Bill is sort of ubiquitous in a way that he shouldn't be. Bill is insane. Bill is very good. But I think too many people sort of just say slapping Bill in here is the answer. And it works a lot of like the way Hulk used to work, where something else might actually push your specific roster a little better. It's just never wrong to put Bill in, but I don't know. Like here, it might not be right. And so I really like the Hela inclusion here.
I don't think there's any doubt that Bill is probably a better model overall, but like in this particular shell, I feel like Hela is doing more work for me. And yeah, that might be wrong, but at the moment, that's what my thinking is.
Anything that gets less Bill on the table, I think is, I'm happy to see people playing other things. So
she's super fun as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I have played in against her a couple times. I played into Vince Kirkov in an LFG game and it was like map E and Hela just annihilated me. I was like, oh my God, what happened? This was like right after the changes. It's like, I never expected that.
The game I lost to Huggy Bear at WTC was Hela a huge part of that as well. Like she just absolutely eviscerated me on one flank. And it was just so quick as well. That was the problem. It was like, it just happened immediately. She dazed and KO'd somebody straight away. And it was like, oh my God, like it was just too much.
I really like those 10 characters. I think it's got a lot of strength and it's got a lot of options for how to sort of replace some of the pieces just based on what people like for themselves. So super, super strong 10 that has a lot of options.
I'd like to mention as well quickly that to me, the strength of the roster is the 3-3 threats. So Domino, X-23 and Deadpool. I think that's what is good about X-Force, and that's why they're all there, is that every single one of them, they're all competing for best three threat in the game. They're killing people, and they're all affiliated in the same list. And the thing that they do, which is the same but in different ways, is that they spike so high. If you put all three of them on the table at the same time, each game, one of them is probably going to spike just to insane degrees. Like, each one of those models can kill 8 threats on their own. It's just when they have their game, it's just absolutely stupid. And so having lots and lots of that kind of model just makes the team really tick. So as a stupid example, I had a game, a tournament recently where X-23 KO'd Supreme Strange and Ebony Maw in one activation just from being out of frenzy after spiking the first attack. And then Deadpool's at the same because he double wilds and gets builders. So I've had 4 builder activations from Deadpool as well. And stuff like that, you can't legislate that for that. Your opponent can't plan for when the turn is. The Deadpool's going to get 4 attacks, and they're going to be 6 dice builders because he's got a reroll. It just suddenly flips games on their head. You just put multiple of that kind of character on the table at the same point, and your opponent can't determine where that thing is going to happen on any given turn, so they can't plan for it.
And that I think that leads into, or leans into, sort of one of the questions that we try and talk about here is like, the unique selling point of sort of X-Force. And to me, the games that I've seen and played with them since the changes, the big thing is everything on the table is a threat and you cannot like get away.
That's exactly in my play style. What I'm thinking is good with them, which is why I don't have so many support characters, like some people have Wong or things like that. And that's why I sometimes think about Baron Zemo instead of Luke Cage, just because trying to make every single point on the table dangerous. I think it's an interesting playstyle because it's like the direct opposite almost of like the tall attrition playstyle that you might have with like I-Hulk with Lockjaw and Wong and Iron Fist, like all hanging around just being potatoey whilst one model goes and does all the damage. X-Force, like the opposite of that, like every single model individually isn't as good, but is a threat point on the table that your opponent has to manage.
Yeah, I've noticed that playing like Web Warriors just into some of these X-Force, it's much harder to deal with this style for like that roster, right? Like the Web roster hates when everything is a threat on the table because they can't sort of efficiently keep up with the cost of staying safe. And so this is one place that I really actually like that as the Webs sort of rise in popularity, for example, this X-Force list I think is really well positioned to compete with that. Now, obviously, Webs are still very good. I'm not saying they beat them all the time, but I think that this is an attrition team that is sort of better than let me go super tall and try and kill this with a model or two or three.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, Webs is a game that like I feel like X-Force have a chance into, where a lot of attrition teams don't. Like they can just immediately just get bamboozled. And model, like cards like Spider's Tracker have a lot more value when that's just one thing to worry about. And that's the thing I found with games against Webs is that you burn through all of their defensive tech really quickly, and then suddenly they're just sitting there, like sitting ducks, basically. Whereas other, like when I'm playing X-Men against Webs, they seem to have Spider's Tracker for the whole game. They can afford to keep it because there's nothing that threatening happening. Sure. So we've got Brace for Impact and Sacrifice as the restricted. We've got Cat and Mouse and Pretty Sneaky Sis as the X-Force affiliated cards. And we've got No Matter the Cost, Exceptional Healing, Fallback, Eyes on the Prize, Mark to Death, and Heroes for Hire.
So let's talk about the Brace and Sacrifice. Why those two restricteds?
Sacrifice is really good when you have squishy models that want to kill things. So if you can redirect an attack off of a domino, for example, and onto somebody who's already moved, auto-activated, then she can get to activate and the other person already does. Also, it's got good synergy with Exceptional Healing, and we have lots of Exceptional Healing characters. So sacrificing onto X-23 and then her just soaking up all the damage is also really good. And then Brace, because again, we've got models with squishy health pools and not particularly defensive. So it just keeps people alive. Generally, there's nothing else I really want. Can't play patch up. I haven't got enough health pools or spare power to use it. And then the other stuff isn't really as good. No need for AR&D or anything.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Brace is pretty take it at this point. I don't know if that's right, but like that's the decision and it's never wrong. Again, it's one of those things. Sacrifice, I think that's what I've heard a lot of people say, is that these two are sort of the best. You can just sort of slot them in. And if you're playing not those two, you should have a really good reason to do that. Sort of in Webs want to play advanced R&D, you know, something with Hulk probably wants to play patch up. But most of the time, if you just throw these two in, you're probably fine.
They're not the exciting choices, but they're probably the safest choices. The other interesting about Sacrifice in X-Force in general is it's not applicable to this list, but you can do lots of fun things with it with X-23 and Honey Badger, so little big sis, little sis plays. So you can sacrifice into X-23 who to then trigger Honey Badger to move in to bodyguard the second attack. So if you have Exceptional Healing available, then you can basically guarantee somebody dies. Somebody doesn't die against two attacks.
Your affiliated cards, Cat and Mouse and Pretty Sneaky Sis. I don't even know. Are there other affiliated X-Force Tactics cards?
There is technically another card, which is the worst card in the game, in my opinion. Some people say anger management, but I think it's this one. Dirty Work, where you get to pay 3 power, and if you usurp the throne against somebody, you get 2 power back on each of your X-Force characters. So instead of victory points, you get 2 power. So yeah,
okay.
It's not good. And you don't get the bonus dice either, so it's just terrible. So that's not in the list for some reason. But yeah, Cat and Mouse is amazing. I use it basically every game, and it's almost every game with Cable as well, because his threat range is just ridiculous with it. You can just plonk him down, move him forward in the middle, usually. Sometimes it's an angle. And then he just can get so far and shoot people turn one, which is a big part of this list, which is early pressure in multiple areas of the board. And then people can't come to the midline if Cable is standing there. And it's that if he can obviously shoot anyway, just with a normal teleport, but Cat and Mouse gets him within the reroll bubble range and the terrain throwing range.
Yeah, I think the only time that I would expect this not to be used on Cable is like maybe on Infinity Formula, where you use it on Psylocke so that she can like attack the back point.
Yeah, that's a huge option. You got so many things you can do on Infinity. Obviously, on Infinity, Cable can use it as a safe grab, and that's viable on like 6 different extracts. So it's quite likely that will be an option too. But if not, the Psylocke can definitely do the thing.
It's cool to see it have so many uses. The only time I've ever actually, before the Errata, I played this card with Sabretooth, and I used it to safe grab and run away. And like, you can't do that. So I was like, this card is great. And then a couple days later, I was like, wait, that sucked. So with Cable's increased efficiency and needing to be in 3 to really bump that efficiency, it's a little ludicrous, quite frankly, how strong that is with him.
Early on, after the changes, people were just daring it, basically saying, oh, let's see what Cable can do. And the answer was, he will just kill whoever you put there. He was just like, if you put Ulic there, Ulic will die. Like, there's no answer to it, so you just have to not go near him, which is such a huge amount of threat projection you can put on the board, and then you can use the rest of the space to try and control it, so yeah.
So for unaffiliated cards, let's run through these. I don't know that there are any surprises here.
So we've got, before that, we've got the Pretty Seekiness, which is...
Oh, yes, my apologies. Yep, thanks for keeping me honest.
No worries, this is the other affiliated card, which is not very commonly used, I'll admit. But when I do use it, it's really, really good. So you might use it against Guardians or Shield or something like that. But giving everybody super stealth for a turn, when it works, is insane. I feel like I've won games single-handedly just on the use of this card. It doesn't come out very often, but obviously a card that can win you a game is worth having in a 10 just for those games when it can.
Like, I think a lot of lists have had this one card where you could put in something like Mission Objective if you wanted to, but there's space for some of these more... maybe specific cards more than those generically useful cards. Like, I think of Aunt May's Wheat Cakes as a similar space for me with Web Warriors. Like, that's really good in the mirror, for example, but like, are you going to play it a ton? No, probably not. So, and I think there's more space for exploration with those cards. So
the flexibility you have with your 10th card is dependent on how good your first 4 or 5 cards are as well, I think. So I'm happy taking Brace, Sacrifice, Exceptional Healing, Fallback, and Cat and Mouse every single game if needs be. So that gives me room to fit in something like this, where if it's good, it's good.
Cards. No surprises here, right? Like, this seems pretty standard, I think, other than maybe Marked for Death.
It's very boring. Heroes and Eyes, obviously, for the two characters involved, Hell and Luke Cage. Exceptional Healing, because we've got loads and loads of healing factor characters. Same for the amount of the cost. Although the amount of the cost is particularly good because we're trying to put turn 1 pressure on the midline when we get to talking about that later. Obviously, that gives X-23 that option. The other thing I like about no matter the cost with X-23 is that if you don't use it turn 1, it's still amazing turn 2, because what will happen quite often is she'll be the one that goes and gets an extract in a safe spot, like a side hammer or something like that. And then on turn 2 or round 2, people will just ignore her because you don't want to get her angry. That means she'll have to double walk. But using no matter the cost will turn double walk into walk 8 dice attack with Pierce walk again, which obviously, when we're talking about tempo, is such a huge difference from double walk that it's just so much value to it.
This card is very good. And when you look at some of these spenders across your team, like, especially with the healing factor models, it's really good. But like, I have no matter the costed Luke Cage's spender, right, to push out some of that extra damage. It's not great, but it's not bad. So just when you have high quality spenders that are a lot of times kept in check by power generation, this card just sort of goes to a different tier.
It's just so flexible as well, because if you don't use it early game, maybe use it late game just to save a power for something. Like, this is never bad. And even Cable has got a really good use for it, because he heals back from his spender. So he can, and it's quite expensive, so he can, you know, spend 3 damage, use a spender, hopefully heal that all back up as well. So yeah. I think you said Marks of Death was the only one that was different, but I've been seeing a lot of Miles, a lot of ASM, even outside of affiliation. And it's just, it feels necessary, basically.
And not just from a dice perspective, which it's obviously fantastic at, but the no stealth, no reroll aspect is so good for things like Psylocke and her. I've got my range 4 I'm going to pursue. Deadpool, you know, turning off some of the stealth, things like that. That card is layered in a really cool way that it just it makes it very strong when there's such a sense, like a model you have to get rid of. It used to be great on Black Cat. Now I don't think it is necessarily, but it's got definitely got some uses against other really strong characters, ASM being a very good one. I like it.
Yeah, it's really flexible. Yeah, it's pretty flexible. There's lots of times you can use it, which is a good thing.
Wonderful. Anything else on tactics cards?
I don't think so. It's pretty boring. It's just taking good cards with good models.
Hey, that's a really strong strategy, turns out. So let's move into your crises then. Let's start with secures here. What secures are you running?
Yeah, so we've got Deadly Meteors, Trusions, and Infinity Formula. And then extracts, we've got Deadly Legacy Virus, Alien Ship, and Montesi Formula.
I've been seeing a lot of meteors lately. Tons of teams are talking to me about meteors. I played it twice in three games over the weekend. Why meteors?
It all comes back to the main strategy with X-Force, or my plan anyway, is the thing we're good at is round one pressure over multiple points. There's lots of models that are good at, lots of teams that are good at sending one model forward on turn one. Like you got your Malachus, you got your I-Hulks, whatever. But what X-Force do is they can send multiple models forward to hit the midline on turn one. So Cable can do it with Cat and Mouse. Logan can do it for free. Scarlet can do it with Cat and Mouse. X-23 can do it with no matter the cost. So we've got all those options to go and hit points. And that means we like having people on the midline so we can hit them. And C-Shape is obviously the best one for that. So Meteors is sort of a C-Shape. Intrusions is a C-Shape. And then the extracts are also C-Shapes. So it's basically just the shape. I don't really care about it being a pace flip. In fact, it's kind of bad sometimes.
Continuing that theme, obviously, Intrusions, midline, and then Infinity. This is not a typical secure package, I would say. And I think that really highlights the strength of the continued what this list is trying to do. I think it's very similar to the Defenders conversation I had with Jeremy. These teams are, they want to get in, they want to brawl, but they're not trying to shoot you down. They want to really get up in the mix with you, and they want to do so efficiently, and they want to force you to play that game.
Yeah, so Infinity is, I mean, it's more traditionally sort of mid-range or even a sort of a web warrior favored thing. But it has synergy with Cat and Mouse, which is why it's quite nice. But also, like, X-Force are really happy with one-on-one brawls. Like, that's one of the things they're good at, as we discussed with the three threats. So if we get stuck on, you know, four models on four different points fighting each other, I think X-Force are probably going to win that. So web warriors don't want to be playing, you know, four of their dudes against Domino, X-23, Deadpool, and Cable. Like, they're not going to win that fight. So we're kind of happy being spread out.
Were there other considerations for secures, and what were those, if there were?
I played Demons in the past. I played mainly that, but it's just no good now with Guardians existing. So I didn't love it either. I think X-Force are better when they're trying to pick one-on-one fights, and E's are basically the opposite of that. It's just everybody in the middle together. So yeah, I think I'm quite happy with these. There are other options, I guess. But people are playing Scoundrels because of the cover. I don't really like that. I think it's too fast. People are playing Sword. The shape's fine, but the 15 is not. Fisk is good for the shape, but the 16 and the stun is terrible. So yeah, it's kind of what we've got. I think this is the case with a lot of teams, is there's two good ones and one that you have to sort of find a last one for.
X-Force plays a style of attrition that I actually enjoy quite a bit, which is, we're going to actually use our mobility to pick efficient fights all across the spread out board, right? For me, it's more fun to play it that way than a Demons, right? I play Scoundrels. I am at best a middling X-Force player, so it's probably not right, but it is fun to have everybody sort of having to fight over points, and I can get to them way better than most of my opponents. There are things like Web Warriors that just do it really well still, but I really like that style. So I like the things you've done here from a secure perspective. I think there are, like you said, a couple other ones that you can consider, but the drawbacks probably are just a little too much. But I think the fact that you're considering like five things that are sort of new-ish to the attrition, and you're considering them for different reasons than maybe previously, I really enjoy that.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really good about X-Force is that they sort of play any mission. So I'm happy basically playing anything. Like, I'll even play Web Warriors on Extremis. Like, it's fine. Like, it's not great, but you can play it. And that's what is one of the great strengths of this affiliation at the moment, the sort of jack of all trades. The thing that's interesting is, like, Scoundrels is actually really good, but the problem is giving it to somebody with another really high-scoring mission. So the opposite example that I like more is like Paranoia. Whenever I get Paranoia with one of my secures, it's an absolute disaster for the scoring team. So Web Warriors, if they do not want to play on Intrusions plus Paranoia, everything on the midline, everybody has to come and stand on the middle turn one. It's just absolute disaster for them. But if I put Paranoia in my list and then give it to them on even Scoundrels as well, it's too fast. There's opportunities for them to score it up too quickly. Senators is another example. Like, I really like Senators because if you cat and mouse Cable, he can hit all six Senators within range three on turn one, which means there's nowhere for anybody to hide. But if you, I gave that to Hellfire once and they had like just all the tanks to just go and steal all my Senators and they just scored all the points immediately. So I think I lost in two turns or something. But there are missions that are good for you when you get them from somebody else, but aren't good when you give them to your opponent. Sort of thing.
Anything else about Secures? Or let's move into Extracts.
Yep, so Legacy Virus, Alien Ship, and Montesi Formula are the three Extracts for me, which is similar reasons to before. They are C-shapes. So again, same problem. Two really good ones in Legacy Virus and Alien Ship. They're perfect. Legacy Virus in particular is a C-shape, which is good. And it's 19, which is sort of my favorite threat level for X-Force. You get Cable, 2-4s and 2-3s, which are really good. And then the third one is Montesi, which is fine. Like, obviously, you give away the middle quite often and go 2-1 down. But it's not the end of the world. You're chasing anyway with X-Force, so you don't really mind too much. It just slows the game up. I've tried other things, tried scrolls and hammers. Still testing Senators. I think I might make it in at some point. But yeah, there's always like problems. Like scrolls, quite often scoring teams will steal your home one and run away maybe with a juggernaut or something. Or they'll just get three somehow. Because it's quite difficult for me to safely get the scrolls against other stuff. Hammers... There's too many weird plays with eyes, like, you know, Thanos getting two on turn one and stuff like that. So you can kind of lose games on round one just from that kind of janky stuff.
These extracts just continue the theme, right? Let's pull people to the middle. Really hard to have multiple extract grabs that aren't super expensive. Like, even teams that do have multiple, they're typically expensive things. Yeah, I think this is a pretty good set for any of these brawly teams, or really anyone that wants to be shooting at all. If your plan is attrition, these three can really put your opponent in a bind.
Absolutely, yeah. And the thing about the C-shapes is that you can, like, typically, you don't have to do it, but the thing you do is put one Cable opposite one, put Logan opposite another, and put X-23 opposite another one. And then whichever one your opponent goes to, then you can attack. But you don't have to do that. You can, like, weigh it up on turn one, and then if they place their bill opposite one, then you can just completely ignore that one and then put everything against something else. So you have the flexibility to like attack the point that you need to attack and not necessarily give away one up and the other.
We've gone through the list. Anything else sort of you want to say about the list as a whole before we sort of ask some of the how to play questions?
I guess just to say that, yeah, you could still play very different characters, very different X-Force lists, and it would still be perfectly reasonable. I don't think this is a template or anything, but I think this is just what I've sort of settled on as the way I prefer to play.
With the way you like to play it and with what this list, how you've gotten to this point, what are the learning curves that you've experienced or that you foresee with picking up this list?
So the reason I like X-Force, or I did before the changes as well, is that it really tests your fundamentals. So there's no janky plays, there's no silly nonsense, just having to pick the right team, deploy them correctly, move them correctly, and then pick your activation orders right. So it's just basically just playing good, clean MCP. And after that, the main thing is just trying to identify that you are chasing the game quite often, which means you need to position aggressively on turn one. And like, as a really stupid example, if you're playing on Infinity Formula, often what you do is you'd go and stand all your models on your Infinity Formulas so they get a point of power, and then next turn they can go and do a thing. Whereas as an alternative, it might be better just to double move someone forward and get within attack range for the next turn. Obviously, you don't do that first activation because you get killed, but something you might do is double move X-23 forward within range 3 of your opponent's Infinity when they've got one model left to attack with on that side of the board, and then you put X-23 in cover if you can, and then let them attack her, and she's not going to die. It's a 1/5 dice attack in cover, but then she might get power, and then if they don't attack her, she's still getting in range to attack people, and things like that. It's like you move everybody forward and get them into a position where they can start picking fights on round two. I think it's not a complicated thing, but it's a thing I see people doing most often, which is just playing a passive turn, passive round one, as if you were not the beatdown, when you're just doing to identify on round one that you are the beatdown, and then you cascade your positioning advantage over the rest of the game just by on round one putting your models in the right place.
Yeah, I think that's super important to recognize with these mid-range teams, especially more, I think I say mid-range, this different style of attrition maybe is a better way to say it, where recognizing with so many engagements that you want to be pushing, recognizing how to do that effectively is something that is going to challenge people a lot. And I think it does carry over a lot to like a lot of your objective teams, you know, Hellfire Club, Web Warriors. When and how to engage is a very important skill, and I think this pushes that from a different angle. So I like this list as a, maybe condescendingly say, learn how to play MCP list. I think it's really good for that. It does force you to do things. It feels like they always have the tools to do so. When we're looking at the roster, you've got tons of places, tons of movement shenanigans. Managing your power to make sure you can always do those things is another little, you know, those little things. I really like this roster from that aspect.
It feels almost incidental, but I guess it's deliberate. It's like lots of models have like little tiny charges or places and things. So they don't have like full movement charges, but like Psylocke's got the short move and Deadpool's got the place and stuff, which means that you can so often get efficient activations out of them. So it's not enough to give them like huge reach, but it's enough to make sure they're always double attacking every time, which can be the difference.
Any other learning curves or kind of notes on what it's going to take to play this well?
Another thing is just don't be afraid to let models die. So the best way to kill, so obviously you're trying to daze people, the best way of trying to daze your opponent's model is to create four fights and just let and lose one of them and then try and win the other three, rather than trying to create one safe fight. So obviously if you just create one safe fight and then daze that one model, that might not be advancing your game plan and quick enough for you to win the game off the back of it. But if you create four fights that are all sort of in the air, but you are slightly advantaged in, hopefully you'll win three, lose one, and then you'll have dazed two or three models. And then that's maybe accelerating the game plan enough to the point where you can start turning the VPs around to your way.
Yeah, I think that's super, another super good point from you about how to pick those fights. A lot of people, I think, focus in on, hey, I've got to remove one. I've got to remove Black Cat. I've got to remove maybe Miles. I've got to remove Star-Lord. And really what this list is doing is saying, I just need to remove things. And so I'm going to force you to try and defend all of the things. That also provides a little bit of safety for you in terms of sort of the dice variability. You're rolling more dice, you're attacking more, you're less likely to fail across four than you are on one.
Absolutely. And because they're all rolling good dice, so there's a chance that some of them are going to do well. And yeah, so as you're saying, that's exactly right. Like when I'm thinking about a turn, I'm thinking about trying to get as many activations as I can from my side and take away as many activations from my opponent as I can. Obviously, like games are up in the mix. Sometimes maybe you just have to kill one particular thing, but like overall in general, that's sort of a general sort of plan.
Optimizing the leadership, but I'm not sure there's a ton of meet here. Is there something I'm missing around optimizing the leadership, or how do you get the most use out of that?
We mentioned it before, but having models that have inbuilt rerolls useful, but you're quite right. There isn't much to talk about here. I guess the main thing is just use it the first chance you get. Don't save it up hoping that you'll get a better roll next time. And don't be afraid just to use it sometimes if you whiff your first attack, just fishing for a wild for an incinerate or something. Like sometimes if I'm shooting something tough like Luke or something, and I'm not particularly, if I whiff the first attack and I'm not going to kill him on the second attack, you would imagine, I might just try and fish for that wild just to try and push that along for the rest of the team. It's not every game, but sometimes just throw it out there and see what happens. You don't have to just always be perfectly efficient with it. Sometimes you can just, you know, try and see what happens.
Yeah, I really like that point about use it. Don't save it for like the perfect scenario. Use it when it's good enough. Like use it at the first best case or first good case rather than waiting for that optimal position. So, we got something out of that. We got something out of that question.
There we go.
And I think we've mentioned some of this question as well, but common squad configurations. So we've talked about sort of Cable and 4-3s. We've talked about Cable, some 4s and a 2. How often do you find yourself sort of playing the same core, or is it more of Cable and then I'm really dynamic?
Quite often the same models, to be honest. So I like Logan a lot. He'll play him when I get the opportunity, but then he might flex in for Psylocke if like you play Webs or something where she's very good. And then usually two or three of the three threats as well, or sometimes all four. But yeah, it's a very fixed sort of list. You usually end up playing 17, 18, or 19. And in that case, you're playing some combination of Cable, one or two, four threats, and maybe one, two threat, and then some three threats. So you just kind of end up playing vaguely the same sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, it helps you. The more you play the same set of models across a wide variety of crises, the better you become at recognizing when you do have to flex. So I think that's perfectly fine. When I was playing a lot of the Sam Avenger stuff, I played the same five models every game, basically. And turns out it's really good. When you find a good 3 to 5 models, there's nothing wrong with just jamming those onto the table.
Yeah, it's just a case of like identifying when particular models are good. Like Domino and X-23 are both really good at killing things, but they're good at killing different things. So Domino is really good at killing one big fat thing. And X-23 is good at killing lots of small things. So when you see your opponent's team, you can sort of pick the model that works best for that particular crisis or opponent.
All right. Well, to the last question is a fluff question. So you said you're a Marvel fan. So any one character you can get put in the game, who's it going to be?
Well, I mean, overall, it's Doctor Doom, obviously. It has to be. But for X-Force purposes, it would be Cannonball, so Sam Guthrie. So the reason I like X-Force is that when I was a kid, I grew up reading the Rob Liefeld comic run with all the pouches and everything. So for 10-year-old Joe, that was the height of comics, and he was one of the main characters in that run, and I always really liked him. So yeah, that's it. And that's one of the reasons why I play X-Force as well, is because they have a place in my heart. Cable was the first model I painted for MCP. One of the reasons I fell in love with the game, because he is just such a fun model to paint. Joy, and it was after painting 1,000 Space Marines or something. Just the fun of actually enjoying a paint job was one of the things that made me really like MCP.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Joe, I thank you again for coming on. This has been wonderful. X-Force is one of my side affiliations right now. I'm having a ton of fun. Just sort of, I throw them on the table at the shop and highly recommend more people play them. So you're on the Discords as Joe Manji. People can just reach out there if they want to get some X-Force tips, or I think you're pretty active in the fan server as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Always happy to talk X-Force. So yeah, hit me up.
Awesome. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up here. Thank you again, listeners, and we'll see you on the next one.